got a special edition of College Volleyball Weekly, because with me are my colleagues, our big men's volleyball fans, who I'm going to actually have them talk a little bit about some women's and some collegiate beach and maybe even some USA athletes abroad, and maybe even some AVP and FIVB. But up on my left is, let's do the intros that we talk trash to each other in our text. Social media influencer of local Hawaiian foods with silky smooth vernacular to make the Hawaiian fans scream. You can hear his sweet voice on his own podcast as well as ESPN Honolulu and CBS Sports Hawaii. That's Tiff Wells. Also, lower middle, we've got the president of the Nikki Sandlin Fan Club and the Conference Carolina spokesperson working on the SIAC fanboy. We've got solid contributor of Off the Block blog with Vinny Lopes. That's Jonathan Bates. He goes by the hashtag or the handle of MPSF bias, but we know that he's biased to everyone except for anything that's on the East Coast or Midwest and beyond. So, hey, thanks for joining me here for our special, we're going to call it the journalist or the media roundtable, because it's been a long time since we've seen each other. It's probably been since last season, not even the 2019 season, because none of our teams played each other or got the chance to play each other this year. So welcome, boys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Rob. Aloha. How's it, Jonathan?
Good. Well, I'm glad to have both of you on, just because I always enjoy spending the time with you. But I actually had the chance to speak to Tiff because I got to interview his mom, who's featured after almost a 40-year career in sports journalism, but she still hasn't finished. And if you haven't seen that yet, be sure to go on to volleyballmag.com. Look at that. Shameless self-promotion, as well as the continued conversation on the Viral Volley podcast. But I wanted to bring these two guys on because not only they're good friends and colleagues, but they're covering sports. And this last year was a unique year, suffice to say. I wish I could say, I hate hearing that word unprecedented, but it truly was. So as journalists covering sports and specifically volleyball, what's it been like since the breakout of the pandemic? And let's start with Jonathan first.
I have a side gig of covering sports, doing statistics for broadcast. And, since March, I have not done any broadcast doing stats, and it's kind of, yeah, I've been able to recharge my battery, but it's just, yeah, I'm jonesing to get back. And, I realize that at least with men's volleyball, it won't happen until at least January 2021 at the earliest, and it's going to be grueling, because by that point, even if we get off to a season at that point, it'll be 10 months without men's volleyball, and it's rough.
You're feeling the pain. How about you, Tiff? I mean, volleyball is a huge sport on the islands, and I mean, obviously you cover a lot of sports, but I know deep down inside you've got a little bit extra for volleyball. So talk about your experience here since the breakout of the pandemic.
It's been very weird and very odd to have this much free time. And with men's volleyball ending, supposed to end in their first week of May, but to be done with volleyball since mid-March, and with the women's volleyball season that was pushed back to at least 2021 when that came out in early part of August with the Big West Conference for Hawaii specifically, having this much free time, it's very weird. It's different, and I feel like I should be doing boards or preparing for a match or going to a practice. So to be thankful and lucky enough to be having this conversation with you on a Tuesday in the second week of September, it's odd, but it's also great at the same time.
Now, let's go over to Jonathan on this one. Where were you when you found out that all the spring sports were canceled?
I was at Pepperdine when the famous Rudy Gobert incident happened. And we were like, it broke. And I was like, David Hunt, did you hear what happened? He's like, no, what happened? And then, you know, I broke the news to him. He's like, whoa, that's crazy. And then, yeah, they still have the match against Jamestown. And then I go into work the next day and find out that certain schools are canceling. And, you know, that next day, news was unraveling by the hour. And it was just, you know, crazy that, yeah, I couldn't really concentrate on my day job, unfortunately, just because I was just so tuned into the cancellations and the news that was unfolding.
How about you, Tiff? What were you doing?
I was actually here in Honolulu. I was supposed to be on a plane ride to Long Beach to go up to CSUN, as the men's volleyball team was going to be playing CSUN to begin the Big West Conference. They were supposed to play Friday, Saturday, and then that following Tuesday, they were going to go over to Malibu and play Pepperdine. And to see that Pepperdine match get pushed back moved ahead from Tuesday to Monday, and then also following the women's basketball tournament over at Long Beach, Hawaii was in the quarterfinal round, and their game on a Wednesday got canceled. The men's basketball for the men as well were playing starting on Thursday in Anaheim. Their tournament got canceled. I found out Thursday morning, maybe 4 hours before I'm supposed to fly out of Honolulu to Long Beach. I found out via ESPN, the mothership. And They were the ones that had broke everything that said, you know, all spring sports are canceled. But just hearing from certain people at the Big West Conference saying, hey, stay tuned, something's going to be coming up in the next couple hours, and just crazy, unfortunate news.
Yeah. Well, I'd just share my story because of how quickly events unfolded. So Tuesday, March 10th, I was slated to cover the tri-duel between UCLA, USC, and Pepperdine at Merle Norman Stadium at your alma mater, Mr. MPSF Bias. And I got a notification saying they're not going to let any fans in, which I thought was odd. It was only going to be essential staff and media. As I covered that entire day of duels, one of the fathers of one of the athletes said, hey, oddest thing, man. They just canceled the Oklahoma City Thunder basketball game at halftime. I'm like, what? And it was like 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And once that happened, March 12th, you had cancellation of Big West Spring Sports. By Friday, March 13th, cancellation of NCAA tournament. And it came so quickly. And by Monday, the 16th, USA Volleyball, or actually the events being hosted for the FIVB Volleyball Nations League, pretty much done. So it happened very quickly, and it was such a shocker because I know all of us really get to see a lot of incredible competition between the men's programs, especially D1-2, and which had so many expectations. For me, Collegiate Beach, AVP, and AVP, that was going on. But I wanted to get your thoughts, Jonathan, on as things unfolded those next few days, what was going through your mind for the rest of the season?
I really did not know like you were saying, unprecedented. I did not know what was going to happen. But at the same time, the more that it unfolded, the more I realized the season was not going to be completed and was unfortunate. And then as the cancellations happened, my first thought was, man, this is so unfair to the seniors that didn't finish their season. And then now we find out that they have been granted a waiver so that the season that was canceled does not count towards their eligibility. And I think that's great. And obviously, I think we'll touch on that later, but it's going to benefit a lot of programs that you have down the road.
How about you, Tiff? I mean, you cover quite a bit and you're the voice of Hawaii athletics. What was the initial response on your part when you realized that this ain't happening?
You know, even to go back to what you're saying, Rob, with the fact of, you know, the Jazz and Thunder game getting canceled and seeing events unfolding that, like I talked about earlier, the Hawaii Pepperdine match that was supposed to be on a Tuesday had moved up to a Monday, and you're just thinking, okay, I have to, you know, change flights, you know, move up hotels, what have you. And then to see basketball get canceled, you know, those events starting to unfold, and things are, they're not changing by the day at this point. They're not even changing by the hour. They're almost changing by the minute. And so to figure out, especially for me, because I'm supposed to be on a flight in 4 hours when all of this news is, you know, really coming to the forefront, and just trying to figure out, am I going? Is it going to be a waste to just get on the plane, to get to Long Beach, to maybe turn around and fly back home, if I can fly at home at this point, to be on, you know, a text chain with all of the UH coaches, with Coach Charlie Wade and Coach Josh Walker and Coach Milan Zarkovic, and to see what they're doing, because they were in Northridge getting ready to go to practice when they were told don't come to the Mandadome. Dome. And so to be figuring out what's happening, then to see the guys come back and on that flight, seeing them, meeting them at Lower Campus outside the Stan Sheriff Center, having an impromptu press conference with Charlie Wade and of course all the seniors. And at the time, like Jonathan said, we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know until maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks after they flew home, that there was going to be a blanket waiver for spring sports athletes. So to see all of these guys talk and to express, you know, different emotions, whether they were of course there was guys that were upset about it, that, you know, things were out of their control, but to see at the time they thought their senior seasons were coming to a close, and for Hawaii, the season was going to be ending sometime in May, and to see a potential national championship taken away because of a crazy uncertain time in this pandemic that we're still in right now, tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. Well, I know I didn't send this particular question your way, and it's not a shocker one by any means, but I mean, I really felt like the 2019 men's season was really beginning to ramp up by the time COVID hit and the pandemic really shut everything down. I mean, it felt like obviously there's Hawaii and BYU battling for that number one spot, and we knew they had bucket loads of talent. But in the EIVA, what did you see happening, both of you guys? Because we know that at one point it is a toss-up, and then Penn State kind of started to really heat up right when the pandemic happened. We'll start with Jonathan.
Well, first off, we would be doing a disservice to UC Santa Barbara. Yes, Hawaii and BYU got lots of pub, and rightfully so, but the difference between 1, 2, and 3, if you, and whatever order you put them in, was very small.
Jonathan, we were going to move westward here. you kind of killed. You stole the thunder a little too early there. We're EIVA. Remember, you have that handle too. EIVA bias. Come on.
all right. Let's go to Penn State. And the EIVA. The problem, I think, with Princeton, we don't know what the Princeton team was in 2019 until conference season, because the way that Sam schedules and the way that he really just has a meat grinder of a non-conference schedule, he really wants to test his team out of conference and then get the team ready for conference play. So there were, they just started conference play and they were doing well. And so we just never knew the Princeton team that should have been playing probably for a conference championship. Penn State looked like they had made a rebound. They were both, they looked really impressive at times and really bad at times. They were very inconsistent, but at least it was a step up from the 2019 season. Those were the two teams, in my opinion, that were really going to battle out. No offense to Mason, but they were hit by the injury bug.
All right, Dan Friend and Jay Hossick aren't on the call secretly, so you'll be all right. The College Volleyball Weekly Consortium of Coaching Intelligence is not here, so you're good. How about you, Tiff? Thoughts on the EIVA?
You know, I was looking forward to it. Like Jonathan said, they had started their conference, and of course, with who Princeton has, and just seeing how exciting they were. You can never count out Penn State, and just the fact that you did have George Mason, who did have that feather in their hat of being the host of the national championship tournament. And you never know, especially with the EIVA, just because it's a 4-team tournament, and all you need is 2 wins, and you're the conference champ. It's different than it is in the Big West. It's different than it is in the MIVA, and of course the Conference Carolinas. Like, unless you're a top 2 seed in the Big West Conference, then of course you only need the 2 wins. But just to see the inconsistency made the EIVA that much more exciting, because on a given night, for the most part, you didn't know who was going to come out of a conference match with a win.
Mm-hmm. Now let's move to the Conference Carolinas. I mean, this is your cup of tea, Jonathan. So let's bust out some knowledge here.
Yeah, for the last couple of years and last year as well, it was Barden and it was King. Jeff Lennox and Ryan Brewer have been doing great jobs with their programs, and both of them are, and we'll touch on this later. Both of these coaches are coaches that coach both the men's side and the women's side. So the fact that they're doing amazing things with the men's team, where they're having divided attention, and it's just a testament to the coaching abilities of both the men.
Anything to add there, Tiff?
Just the fact that, like Jonathan said, you know, King and Barton have been the two that have sort of risen to the top of, you could throw in a Belmont Abbey here and there, but for the most part, it's been King and it's been Barton. But just the fact that both of those schools, and credit the entire conference, because they have been able to find ways to bring a Long Beach State, bring a Hawaii, bring a BYU, bring a UC Irvine, bring a Lewis, bring some of these top tier teams to these Conference Carolina gyms, these schools predominantly in North and South Carolina, that maybe those fans, those schools, and those players for that matter, don't get to see that level of competition on a day in, day out basis. And at the end of the day, the fact of the matter is these higher teams that get a chance to go to these Conference Carolina schools or the lower schools within the MIVA or the EIVA, to play them on their home court, that's got to make their season. And just the fact that you get to bring that level of high level volleyball to these schools, it helps to grow the game. And at the end of the day, that's the phrase that this sport has been trying to push to the forefront for these last few years.
Yep. Now, one of the conferences I was watching really closely this year, because Dan Fan was planting the seed in my ear each week on College Volleyball Weekly, the MIVA. Let's start with Jonathan on this one. I'm sorry, let's start with Tip on this one, since Jonathan went first on the Conference Carolinas. Thoughts on the MIVA?
Lewis. And it was a team that I had seen Hawaii play in the national semifinal last year, or in 2019 rather, over at the Pyramid. And the fact that Lewis was very good, had a few All-Americans, especially Ryan Coonan on the left side. And you throw in their middle, Tyler Mitchum. Those two guys offensively could hang in the Big West, could hang in the MPSF.
I got to drop TJ Murray's name, because whenever that was like our thing, Dan Friend's like, you know, TJ said, why don't we mention his name? So I'm just going to do it every College Volleyball Weekly here.
you cannot forget TJ Mitchum. The question mark for them was going to be at setter. What were they going to do with Yoshimoto having graduated? But they had picked up right where they left off, and they brought in Hawaii for a match. The Rainbow Warriors were able to come away with a win on the home court of Lewis. But just to see that battle between Lewis and Loyola year in and year out, yes, Loyola had a few injuries here and there. McKendree's looked interesting the last couple of years, and credit Jonathan Bates' friend Nikki Sandlin, the head coach. She has done a marvelous job, yes, at McKendree. I saw them at BYU last year, and not many teams win in Provo. They did. They found a way. So just to see, especially a D2 team, be able to compete like Lewis with those big boy D1 programs, to see that three-way battle in the MIVA, that would have been fun to watch.
Yeah, you're mentioning the setter for Lewis, Kevin Calling, freshman. So he comes back with another year under his belt. Great experience. He already had good hands, a solid 6'8", 6'9", block. So looking good for Dan Friend and his Flyers. How about you, Jonathan? Thoughts on the MIVA?
I have three thoughts. Lewis, again, I would say the way that Lewis was playing, unlike almost any other conference, Lewis, if they didn't win the MIVA last year, it would have been an upset. I could see, you know, like we were saying, with the Big West, Hawaii, and Santa Barbara. Yeah, if Santa Barbara won that, I wouldn't have been surprised. BYU probably is in the same conversation with Lewis and the MIVA. Conference Carolinas, Barton versus King, and Penn State, Princeton, EIVA. It was just there was that much separation between Lewis and the rest of the league that it was, I would have been surprised. And speaking of Lewis, a fun nugget for you guys, Ryan Coonan has the opportunity to be the first 5-time All-American in men's volleyball history. How about that?
He's going to do that.
He's totally going to do that. And that's going to be awesome. Another team that you spoke about, Rob, is Loyola. I don't know if he's coming back, but I would imagine he is. Garrett Zolk had a redshirt last year. So if he comes back, the redshirt that the 2020 year that I don't know what we want to call it, the Mulligan year, it really benefits Loyola for sure. And then another one that hasn't been announced officially, but Rob, you know this as well. Ball State has a big transfer that they are bringing in, a opposite from Barden, and that's going to be huge for their hopes in 2021.
I definitely load up because Ball State definitely was in the fight and in the mix for the MIVA, but adding another cannon to their right side, Mandalaris, that could tilt the scales. And I'm sure there's some coaches who are unhappy about that one in the MIVA. Now let's jump to MPSF. And obviously a lot of news come 21 season, but what was their 2019 shaping up to be like? Let's go with Jonathan. Let's go with Tiff on this one, and then we'll shift over to Jonathan.
Three letters, BYU, and everybody else playing for second. I was fortunate enough to see the Cougars come out to Honolulu. What is right now the last weekend of the 2019 season, 1-2. And we had seen the serve of Gabby Garcia Fernandez multiple times. I've seen a lot on BYU TV. But to see that live, see his 8 service aces in a 3-set match, and the offensive dominance that BYU put down on Hawaii, maybe one of the worst losses in Hawaii history, and it was a quick one. And to see BYU and Hawaii round 2 that following night on a Friday, Cougars looked good. They looked in control. Gabby broke the single season record for aces for BYU, and he would have had at least 9-10 more matches to just build upon that record. Sellout crowd, Rob, I know you talked about this with my mom earlier this past week with the sellout crowd and what it is to play the Stan Sheriff Center. Of course, John Stanley getting to come, or Will Stanley and John Stanley getting to come home and play in front of their friends and family. But the fact of a 3-hour and 18-minute match, 5-set rally scoring deuce in that 5th set. Yes, I'm happy Hawaii was able to come from behind to win it in a reverse sweep. But to see, again, high-level volleyball in person and knowing how scary good BYU was, no one else in the MPSF was going to come close unless BYU just forgot to play volleyball on a conference night.
All right, Jonathan, you got the gavel. Thoughts on the MPSF?
Hey, Tiff, you didn't get overtime, did you, on the 3 hours and 18-minute minute broadcast?
No, I did not.
Like Tiff said, it was BYU and everybody else. In any given night, 2 through 6 – or 2 through 7, I'm sorry. A team could have beat another team. I'd say the one thing that, looking forward to 2021, we won't see Kofi back at UCLA, so that's going to be disappointing. We'll get into this later, but I'm sure. But teams like a team like Pepperdine and a team like Long Beach State and the Big West are teams that I really look forward to see how they're going to jump from 2020 to 2021 because they were so young.
Yeah, I feel like the MPSF, we are seeing some teams really rise to the occasion in the form of Grand Canyon University of Camden Gianni and what's the other gentleman's name? Christian Janke, the other San Diego kid. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Concordia started upsetting. They knocked out my guys. That hurt me big time. Early on, although they played each other so many times, But again, you have David Hunt at Pepperdine. You have UCLA. You know, they still hadn't really found their rhythm. And then Stanford, you know, they were going three deep on setters due to injuries. So we never truly got to see the more traditional powerhouses at full strength. All we saw these newer teams really step their games up. So it made, I thought, the MPSF super exciting, even for your alma mater, Pepperdine, Tip.
Yeah, it really did. But you talk about Grand Canyon, and again, I got to see them the opening weekend of the season. They were out here for the tournament, the Stan Sheriff Center, and sure, they went 1-2. They were swept by Harvard, or they lost to Harvard in the first match of that tournament. But Camden Gianni, what he did in that tournament, made the all-tournament squad, but just the fact that he was able to come back from that near catastrophic incident in Phoenix the season before, and just the fact that he's able to play at such a high level and scary good. He's going to be one of those pin hitters to really look out for, not just for 2021, but for the rest of his collegiate career. And you throw along, like you said, with Janky, it's a very good underrated pin duo coming out of the MPSF.
Yeah. I just want to add that in regards to Camden Gianni, just so for those of you who don't know, he actually suffered a heart attack like December 28th of 2018, was resuscitated by the trainer and the assistant coach, had open heart surgery on January 16th, and then was able to play a year later. So it's an amazing story and not a shameless self-promotion. It's a great story. It's on volleyballmag.com. I had the chance to interview him, and Grand Canyon obviously did one of the top moments of 2019 was him surviving. So it was a very powerful year for Grand Canyon and Matt Worley and his boys. So we didn't mention anything about USC. I didn't know if you wanted to add anything about your alma mater, Jonathan, because I mean, I think you're contractually obligated as an alumni to at least say something.
Am I? Because they all saw my paycheck, so, you know, I felt like the school that paid my salary at my day job, I mentioned them, so I think I'm good. But let's get back to Concordia. We're talking about great pin hitters with Concordia, and then we all know about the pin hitters at BYU with Gardini and Gobby, but let's not forget about Concordia like you were talking about, Rob. Maimon Barsemian and Jordan Hoppe are coming back. You know, if it wasn't for Gabi and Gardini, they might be the best duo in the MPSF. You know, probably off the top of my head, maybe a top five duo. Mm-hmm. And they just obviously don't get the run that, you know, a power program like UCLA or BYU or Hawaii gets, you know. And I'm really interested to see how their 2021 season comes.
Yeah, Coach Sean Patchell doing some good work down right down the way from UC Irvine at Concordia, literally a half-mile drive up the hill in Turtle Rock. So let's move on over to mine and Tiff's home conference, the Big West. And, you know, since you're the non-Big West guy, Jonathan, let's let you start in on this one.
So like I was saying, Sam, everybody's talking about BYU. Everybody is talking about Hawaii, rightfully so, at the end of last year. But Santa Barbara, the senior class that they had, and I believe most of them are coming back, if not, or most of their key contributors that were in that senior class are coming back. I combined that with probably the best passing team I have seen in the last 5 years. And then you guys both know this, that Rob Jim is just kind of unique, you know. It has its own home court advantage. I think there's something to be said about not having the limelight on you. Like, I think Rick loves not having the limelight on him. He could do his thing, no pressure. And coming into next year, I could see them being a force for being a national championship contender.
Well, I'm going to jump in because that's a great segue. You said ringing in the ear. I'm going to go with UCSD's Kevin Ring because he had an excellent pin hitter. First year, Kyle McCauley, transfer from Orange Coast College. The guy rattled the Big West this year because he was playing incredible ball. And he's coming back for sure because he's only a junior. But I'm curious as to what other players and athletes are coming back. Is Connor Walbrecht coming back? I haven't seen any official announcements, but – and what Kevin Ring is doing with now in scholarship money at UC San Diego. And I believe it's they're officially a member of the D1 as of July 1, according to you, Jonathan.
Yep.
So they've always been a scary team to play. They, for some reason, like to take Irvine to 5 and upset him in 5. So, UCSD was a team to watch for me, and I will leave it there because I want Tiff to break down the Big West because you are, since your mom is the oracle of Hawaii volleyball, you are the oracle of the Big West.
You talk about Coach Kevin Ring, and I've known him for years, and I'm so happy for them that they are now fully fledged D1. They do get the money now that they can bring in. They can, you know, give out those scholarships, all 4.5 of them, to help out that roster. And kudos to him. Kudos to the program. But more so, kudos to the athletic department, because at any point in time, they could have gone a different direction just because of where UCSD usually was in the MPSF and where they had been in the Big West Conference. In the 2 years, they hadn't won a conference game. And that was going to change here in 2020. So it was going to be exciting to see that progression for them. Jonathan talked about UC Santa Barbara. They're always a very tough out. And like he said, one of the best all around passing teams. And that credit goes to head coach Rick McLaughlin and being with him at Pepperdine when I was a student there, seeing how good the Waves were on floor defense and serve receive when he was an assistant to the GOAT, Dr. Dunphy. You knew UCSB was going to be right there. Everybody talked about Long Beach. Everybody talked about Hawaii. Rob, Irvine was going to be that sort of wild card. Like you said, they always go to 5 for whatever reason it is against the UC San Diego. But they at the end of the day, they still had a 7-footer. And coaches will tell you, you can't coach height. And so I felt Irvine was always going to have a shot. Felt CSUN was going to take a little bit of a slide again this year. It was almost going to be them at the bottom of the Big West. And you could almost make a case that for 3 through 5, it could have been anybody's night, but it almost seemed at the end of the day, the top two teams, it was going to be Hawaii. And I will throw in that wild card of UC Santa Barbara, just because, like Jonathan said, playing at Rob is different. And for Hawaii in 2020, they would have had gone to Rob Gym for 2 matches. And on any given night in Rob Gym, you guys have both been there. Crazy things can happen.
Well, the huge question mark for me in the Big West was Long Beach State, because they had a 10-1 record when the season finished, but they hadn't really seen a lot of the teams that we've been mentioning already. I'm curious what you guys think about the Long Beach State team. And we'll go with Jonathan first.
Like I said, having basically a mulligan here is probably going to benefit Long Beach State and Pepperdine more than any other program. They were so young, and obviously the players that were redshirt freshmen last year, sophomores, they were in the practice gym against the 2 Inigas and the Falcos, and that helps a lot. But you know, actually getting game or match practice or match experience in is a whole nother animal. And I think they, you know, I was not sold on them last year, like for reasons you were mentioning, Rob, that they just hadn't played anybody, so there was no way to really judge how good they really are. But yeah, you know, Allen's record speaks for himself, and I think they're going to take a big jump. It might not show it in a ranking, because they were number 4, I believe, number 5 in the country. Mm-hmm. But I just from seeing it with my own eyes, they're probably going to take a big jump, I think.
Yeah. Well, Tiff, you alluded earlier, I interviewed your mom on volleyballmag.com, but in our discussions off cam, I asked her why she had waited this long, and she goes, well, I was really hoping, I felt like this was a year for Hawaii to win a national championship. And I know that you're not that homer kind of guy, but I want you to talk about Hawaii because they do have a unique lineup. They had a great team chemistry, and they were playing strong. So can you touch on what made the Hawaii program so successful up until the pandemic shut everything down?
Well, and like Jonathan said, something with Long Beach State, and this is something that Hawaii had, that you lost a lot of All-Americans. And the fact that you lost arguably one of the best setters from that 2019 class in Joel Worsley. You throw in a Stein Von Tilburg, of course, Brett Rosemeyer off the bench, and a Dalton Solberg in the middle. A lot of questions were being asked about Hawaii. Sure, you returned All-Americans in Ronald Potapunov, Patrick Gassman, Gage Worsley. But how would Colton Cowell elevate from being that 0-2 to now an 0-1? And who would be that setter? Would it be the sophomore Jakob Tella? Or would you throw in the redshirt freshman in Brett Sheward? And there was some, I won't say controversy, but there was some back and forth as to who head coach Charlie Wade was going with throughout the non-conference portion of the season. A lot of flaws were opened up in that first match against BYU. Hawaii was able to find a way, like I said earlier, to come from behind and get that victory in five to get the series split, get a very big bullet point on their resume. You know, I thought 2019 they had the better team. I thought if that match is on a neutral court and not at the Walter Pyramid, Hawaii finds a way to win that match. And again, nothing against Long Beach, nothing against the crowd. But again, credit the athletic department, credit Coach Allen Knight, because like you guys have said, and I agree to this to a T, he's one of the best coaches in the collegiate game. And he saw it down the line that with, you know, in 2015 when he brought in a Tuininga, a DeFalco, and an Ensing, he felt that they were going to be special. And they were. Not just in terms of Long Beach recruiting classes, but in terms of national recruiting classes, going to four Final Fours, back-to-back national championships. That school and for what Allen Knight did for Long Beach and what that group did just to help bring that recruiting base to 2020, I feel it would have been a three-way race between BYU, Hawaii, and I'm going to throw in Jonathan's wildcard team here with Santa Barbara. It would have been those three teams and almost everybody else playing for that other semifinal spot in the national tournament.
Mm-hmm. Lewis.
Well, let's move on to what we foresee happening here in the next few months. What do you think is going to be happening here? It's here in early September. What do we expect to see come when the projected men's season is supposed to start? We'll go with Jonathan. You look like you're ready to go on that one.
I think first off, football and basketball need to happen. If those sports don't happen, there's no way that any other sport's going to happen. Because let's be real. Those sports are the ones that fund these non-revenue sports like men's volleyball. And if those don't happen, men's volleyball season's not going to happen. That being said, if it does happen, there's no way it's going to be a full season. I think it's going to be not even just a shorter season, probably a conference season or a conference season plus a couple more matches. The MPSF and the Big West are very well suited for a smaller season with having most of the teams nearby, except for Hawaii, of course, and BYU, but that accommodations could be made for those. Conference Carolinas should be fine, and they'll probably allow the independent teams that are in Tennessee to come be in the fold. I think what's going to be a little bit more of a challenge would be like the MIVA and the EIVA, because they're a little bit more spread out. But I really think a conference season is probably what we're looking at.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you look, today is what, September 8th, and I don't know if you guys heard, but the governor and the mayor just announced here in Hawaii that there's another 2-week lockdown. So in terms of, you know, quarantine and coming in and out, it's pretty darn near difficult to bring in yourself, let alone now a team. It's a situation where, like Jonathan said, if football for the most part doesn't happen. I mean, there have been some non-conference games here and there, but there have also been games that have been postponed or canceled because of more players getting tested. And so I think like you guys have said, it's going to hurt the EIVA and the MIVA just because of how spread apart the conferences are. I think to an effect, if we do have a season, in terms of non-conference, if there's any sort of games added in, I think it's gonna hurt Hawaii. They traditionally bring in a BYU, a Pepperdine, non-conference teams that are very strong, that get good crowds, if we have crowds next season, to help bolster their overall RPI and that non-conference resume. If you can't get teams in here for the non-conference, I really think at the end of the day, it's going to hurt Hawaii. I think it's also going to hurt teams in the conference Carolinas, because they're able to somehow get these bigger teams to come to their gyms for a one match or two match series. And then they make it a trip to play, you know, two or three of those teams in that conference to make that trip worthwhile for them. So I think you're going to see a lot more of regional play, a lot more teams utilizing buses, not a whole lot of flying. And just the fact that you might be having some men's matches being moved up in the day from a 7 p.m. first serve to going to maybe what the Conference Carolinas do and having a noon or a 1 o'clock start time. That way you can get the visiting team out of the gym, on the road to their respective institutions, so they can get back to campus. Because at the end of the day, these guys are student athletes. They're students first. And school-wise, school comes first for a lot of these guys, and it should be. So I think for that landscape, it's the new normal. It's unfortunate where it is going. It's so tough to predict, just because this situation, it's ongoing, it's current, and we don't know if or when it's going to subside.
Yeah.
I would say also one more thing, that it's a aspect that Hawaii and the Conference Carolina schools have in common is they have only one facility to play four sports: men's volleyball, women's volleyball, men's basketball, women's basketball. And if those four seasons overlap, it's going to be a logistical nightmare for those schools to get all four sports in at the same time.
Yeah, good point there. Yeah, I want to remain optimistic in all this, but, you know, looking at the data and looking at how the fluidity of information has been, for instance, California has gone from purple to red, so which means now you can have smaller gatherings, no more than 100 or 25% of the venue capacity, and it's gone too slow. And as much as I like to see things happening here, which a lot of the teams are located right here for the Big West and MPSF, I just can't see it happening. Things have to happen a lot more quickly for that, for men's volleyball to be back on the go again. With that, what kinds of things should we expect to see, or are you looking forward to seeing, being that now some teams have gotten extra, or athletes have had an extra year of experience? Are there any things that you feel are going to, highly influence the game given this waiver year? We'll start with Tiff.
Well, like Jonathan said, and you throw in a Ryan Coonan getting a chance to become maybe a five-time All-American, which he will if there's a season next season. I'm looking for Hawaii. I'm looking for, obviously, everybody knows about Rada Potapunov, Colton Kawa coming back, but also for Pat Gaspin, because he's going to be playing in his sixth season. And for him, this season's going to mean a little bit more to him because his dad is in the medical field up in Clovis. And so I think a lot of these players that have close family, whether it's a mom or dad or, you know, someone that, you know, an auntie or uncle that is in the medical field, I think a lot of these guys are going to have a heightened sense. I won't say of awareness, but I think a heightened sense of playing for something bigger than themselves. And for Hawaii, Rob, you know about this, Jonathan, you do as well. That sense of playing for something more than yourself is very apparent here on the island, because you're playing for more than yourself. You're playing for an entire state. And you guys saw this at the NCAA tournament last year, a boatload of Hawaii fans in green and white at the Walter Pyramid. And almost at times they were louder than the Long Beach State fans. And so I think for these guys that are older, a lot of these now going to be fifth year, possibly sixth year, that this is going to be their last go around, regardless if there's another waiver, if that happens to be the case. You're going to see these juniors, seniors, super seniors have a very heightened sense of, this is my last go around. I got to do it now. And I've seen on social media guys here on the island doing extra training, extra, you know, whether it's working out in the ocean, working out at a park, doing something in their parking garage, in their condominium complex, trying to do something to better themselves, get 1% better every day, Marv Dunphy likes to say, because a lot of these schools, they're closed. Their gyms, they can't have access to, whether it's the weight room or the facility they play in. And so I think a lot of guys are taking it upon themselves, not just to get extra reps, but to get physically and emotionally stronger for a 2021 campaign, which for a lot of them, it's going to be their last go around.
Yep. Jonathan, take a shot at it.
I'll provide you with a segue into another question for you. But the one thing I'm looking forward to is Stanford. Stanford announced earlier that they're cutting the men's team. So the seniors and the redshirt juniors, they're like Tiff was saying with Hawaii, they're going to be playing for something more than just themselves. They're going to, they know that it's probably going to be their last go around, and they're going to give it, even find that extra gear and give it
caveat, all they have. Players are showing up in the portal. I'm just saying, we got to, because with the NCAA portal, that changes the game. It's like, oh, I got another year. Well, I'm going to transfer to somewhere that maybe needed an opposite or a middle. I'm not saying that certain people would cherry pick other schools for athletes, because that doesn't happen, does it?
So the portal, the portal happens in more than just men's basketball and football. Is that what you're saying, Rob?
Let's take a break right there, because there's so much to talk about. And if you're just joining us, I've got Tiff Wells, ESPN Honolulu, joining me from Honolulu, Hawaii, Jonathan Bates, aka MPSF Bias in LA. We'll be right back in just a minute for the Viral Volley Podcast and our special edition of our Journalist Roundtable of College Volleyball Weekly. Hey, welcome back. I'm Rob Aspero with the Viral Volley Podcast with our special edition of our Journalist Roundtable of College Volleyball Weekly. Got Tiff Wells, ESPN Honolulu, and Jonathan Bates off the Block blog. Thanks again, gents. We had a long first segment, a lot of news. It's been 6 months since collegiate men's volleyball. But we're going to jump into what's going to be happening here, or what's been happening the last few months. Like, what has caught your eye news-wise or social media-wise? And let's see if we can knock a few things out here, because there has been a lot. I didn't know how to approach this because there was so much. So I'm going to go with our homegrown guy here, since he's closest to me, Jonathan Bates.
Social media, what has changed?
Or news, because that's how we find out everything now, social media.
Really? I thought it was just, I guess it is, right? Wow. So much has happened in the last 6 months, you know. We're not just talking. So I think we'll get to it eventually. But not only the cancellation of the college men's volleyball season, but the cancellation of the postponement of the Olympics. I was really looking forward to it, you know. Maybe because I am biased, I thought we had the United States had a good shot at getting a gold medal. I still think we do in 2021, but even more so if the Olympics were happening this year. And I hope that this was the 2021 Olympics. I read a article that saying that the IOC is going to have one regardless. I don't know how much salt to put into that, but that's having no Olympics in 2020 is probably one of the bigger news items over the offseason.
Yeah, I'll agree with Jonathan on that one. And for Hawaii, it means a little bit more, because especially on the men's volleyball side, a third or a fourth, maybe a third of that team comes from the 808 state. Of course, with the Shoji brothers and Micah Christensen, Micah Ma had an outside chance to make the team as a utility guy, could basically play every single position if John Sproul wants him to, and that includes middle blocker, which I know Michael really wants to play. But just the fact that, you know, like you guys, like we've all said, you know, social media, it's where you get your news instant. That's what this day and age is to get the information right away. And to do that, you go to your phone, you go to your computer, and you go onto Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. And for us, I don't know how it is with you guys with, you know, the number of COVID cases and the batch testing, you know, on the daily, how it gets released. But for us, it comes out between anywhere 11 a.m. to noon. And that's basically what this, that has been for the last 5 months, is how many cases are there? How many are positives? What's the batch number? What's the percentage? And it's to have that be what, I won't say you're looking forward to, but with that being the one of the top things you're looking at day in and day out, it can be mentally draining. So I think but I will agree with Jonathan. Maybe one of the top stories is just the fact that this is supposed to be the Olympics. And I'm curious as to where both the men and the women for USA Volleyball, where they would have placed.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out as mine the word cancellation, because you had the cancellation of Stanford men's volleyball at the end of the 21 season. You had the potential cancellation of Urbana Athletics, which means their men's volleyball program in their first or second year is done. You had the potential cancellation of UC Riverside Athletics, cancellation of College of William & Mary Athletics. I mean, we're the dominoes are still falling. Unfortunately, it's a reality due to the lack of income and the shortfalls that the universities are suffering from. So that's definitely one of the things that's really caught my eye, because from a men's volleyball standpoint, we saw the highest participation rate amongst and growth in particularly men's and boys volleyball. 25%, I believe, is the correct number, high school participation and club participation across the United States. Right? That's good for men's volleyball. But overall, volleyball was growing. So cancellation is definitely on the big negative. I'm really hoping First Point Foundation is able to help save some programs, create some new programs, which I know they have been doing between Wade Girard, Coach Sprah, and the rest of the team and the committee and the organization of First Point. But cancellation is definitely on the forefront of my mind.
Yeah, Rob, you talk about cancellation and programs that, you know, not so much athletic departments losing all of their sports, but some. One that hit home here a couple weeks ago, Jeff Hall, not being kept as the Sandbows head coach, and my heart breaks for him and his two little girls. They've been nothing but great friends, great listeners of myself for volleyball, and to see that news come through Twitter a few weeks ago, and seeing that come through, and my heart breaks for him, because what he did for that program and taking over for Scott Wong, who went over to Pepperdine to be their indoor coach for the women. And to see what Jeff did, Hefe, as he's known, every year but one, they made the NC2A tournament and fell short of a national championship once or twice. And for what he did for the Sandbows, Angelica Jungquist is going to have a lot to take over as both the associate on the indoor game for the women and now overseeing the beach program. Seeing, like you said, cancellation and people losing jobs, people that we know, those are some of the headlines for 2020.
Yep. Jonathan, what's your next item that's caught your eye in the last few months?
We mentioned it a little bit before. The SIAC is adding, or six teams from the SIAC, a historically Black college and university conference, are bringing on board six men's volleyball programs this year. And not only is that great for the sport, but just great and for increasing diversity for the sport. And one of the hires already has been made official for Valley State, hired former Charleston assistant coach and former Ball State player Larry Rather as their first head coach. I think that's going to be a great hire for them, and I'm excited to see how these schools grow the sport. And with those six added in, plus the plus Converse adding in Converse Carolinas the following year, men's volleyball will get to 50, and that's going to segue into another thing that caught my eye. Men's volleyball was earlier this year, this offseason, was slated to have their national championship bids cut. Right now it's 7, and they were talks to cut it even further because men's volleyball right now is under the magic threshold of 50 schools. And with the HBCU schools, the SIAC schools, plus the addition of Converse, we'll have 50, and hopefully that will be enough to not cut away any of the bids in the men's volleyball national tournament.
Yep. How about you, Tiff? Next one for you.
We kind of touched on it earlier, just the fact that UC San Diego is now a fully fledged D1 program going into the Big West Conference. And for sure, they've, you know, been with on the men's side the last couple of seasons. But now that, and, you know, with both you and I, Rob, that we're really into the Big West Conference for the schools we, you know, follow at the closest, just to have the BWC add 2 more schools to make it 11. You throw in another big city in San Diego, you throw in Bakersfield, but I'm just excited because San Diego has always been a D2 program, and now they get money. Now they are able to offer both academic, now athletic scholarships, and to make them even more competitive. And you're throwing in a very good women's basketball program, a very good women's soccer program. You throw in baseball. Of course, men's volleyball has been on the rise, even though they hadn't won a conference match in the first 2 years of the Big West Conference. I'm just excited to see, especially on the men's volleyball side, what head coach Kevin Ring and that athletic department can do, not just to see who they bring in terms of talent, but to see what kind of upgrades they can make to all of their facilities now that they are fully fledged D1.
Yep. Hey, Rob, let's not let our friend Tiff off the hook here. He's mentioning UC San Diego because he wanted a reason to plug his Slam Diego Padres in this podcast.
That's loyalty right there.
who by the way, they are playing right now, so I'm missing the game. Luckily, I have it on DVR. And Jonathan, by the way, they did hit another grand slam, so that's 7 for the season.
But who's counting?
The mannequin in right field with the jersey that will now have to change from 6 to 7.
Well, hey, one of the items that right when COVID hit that came out was the proposal by the Big 5 FBS schools to reduce the NCAA minimum program requirement for D1 programs, which, you know, on the surface, if you don't follow what's happening in sports, what that would have allowed those teams to do that were in those conferences was to drop the minimum, which meant get rid of some D1 sports. They can save some money. And of course, some of those schools would have been volleyball, particularly men's, women's, and beach were on the chopping board if that proposal went through. I got that tweet from, I believe, is USA and UCLA head coach John Sparrow said, hey, we got to do something about this. You know, within 8 hours, I was on the phone with he and Kathy DeBoer of the ABCA, and we were just putting together a campaign to get people to sign a petition to not allow this to happen. It passed the initial vote, but had to go up to the president's about 4 or 5 days later, and they made the statement saying, we are not going to allow that to happen. So, short-term victory, but we still got to watch closely because as programs are being canceled and cut, you know, everything's on the chopping block. So
I think one more to add, Rob and Jonathan, is the fact that we knew that 2020, George Mason was going to host the Final Four, Ohio State was going to host at the Covelli Center in 2021, but for 2022 through 2025, those bids were going to be handed out within the next maybe what, 12 to possibly 14 months. And it's always curious to see who throws in a bid, who puts in a bid, but more so to see where the selection committee decides to finally award which schools or which cities get to host the Final Four.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me correct you there, Tiff. Sorry. So 2022 is going to be at UCLA, so it's the 2023 season on. And then on a podcast I did with Off the Block, shameless plug, Russ Yerk mentioned that, confirmed that Mason did put a bid in. So hopefully the championship committee will see that bid and reward them for missing out on this year's bid.
Well, I wanted to transition over to former collegiate volleyball players who play internationally and for the Olympic teams. We already touched a little bit on the possible non-occurrence of Tokyo 2021, but how does this all affect the men's national team particularly? We'll start with Tiff first.
Well, I mean, you look at the possibility of having the Olympics in 2021. Are there any seniors that are going to be considered? I mean, you had Jake Haynes at Ohio State in the middle of the 2020 campaign already bow out to say he was going to start getting ready to train with the Olympic team. I'm not going to try to throw out names, but are you going to see, you know, possible first team All-Americans decide I have a shot to maybe make the roster? Do I not come back even though I'm granted this extra waiver, or do I use it, try to go for the Olympics? And if I don't, do I have that ability to come back for maybe 2022? But I'm just more curious to see these guys. And I've seen, you know, guys like Kavika Shoji, Eric Shoji, they've been playing professionally already for the last week or two. And just seeing the protocols that they're having to go through day in and day out, you know, go from quarantine to their arena, if it's not a bubble, to be tested to make sure that everything with them is health-wise okay to play. Mm-hmm. But specific players, just because they're possibly, you know, seniors are going to be super seniors in 2021. I'm not at the right frame of mind right now to throw out any sort of U.S. collegiate names to possibly potentially bow out to try and make that roster.
Yeah. How about you, Jonathan? Thoughts on that?
I'll mention a player, but he's not eligible for the United States men's national team. But I'm a player along those lines. I'm really curious to see how I think he's coming back, but things can change. Is Gabby Garcia-Fernandez. Yeah, the Puerto Rican national team is obviously pretty strong, so it'll be uphill battle for him to make the team. But from what we've seen the last few years, I would not count him out. That's just something. I'm not basing that on anything as much as I'm curious to see how things unfold. As for the men's national team, I mentioned this to you guys off camera. The age seems to be an issue for especially middle blocker. Our starting middle blockers are kind of on the old side. So that's why I was saying that this year would have been a little bit better than next year, because I'm talking about Max Holt and David Smith. They're not getting younger. And, and there's a lot of experience with those guys that the players that are in the pipeline just don't have, you know?
I actually argue to the contrary on that one, because in speaking with David Smith early in the summer, he said that this time off was so refreshing that he felt renewed to play. And my guess is without having to do as many reps on jumping and blocking, that they're ready to go. And in fact, David Smith's team, Zaxa, just won the Polish Cup this last weekend. In the semifinal match, they defeated Jeff Jendrick, the other young middle blocker from Loyola, who's playing for Asseco Rosowa, beat them 3-0, and then ended up beating Skra Belchov, which is Taylor Sanders' team, who's only 27 years old, since you didn't have that on your fact sheet. And in my interview with Taylor in the beginning of the summer, because he happened to be living down the street from me, said, let's go on the podcast. He's like, this time off has been incredible for healing and just to reconnect with family. And you could see that he's had a renewed light and motivation to play better. Although he didn't play in the championship match, and there's some video coming out social of him like just taking some lighthearted swings. He's getting his shoulders above the net. I mean, he's got hops without even trying. So I think we're going to see a very rejuvenated, although more mature, I'm not going to say older, USA Men's National League team come out focused and ready to grab gold. But I'm a USA homer, so. And I'd hope you guys are too. Hey, with that, I wanted to give you guys the closing comment. And what I've been doing on the podcast was, and I probably should have given you a little heads up on this one, but you know, we're going through these times. They're unprecedented, as much as I hate saying it, but what words of encouragement and hope would you guys have for our listeners and viewers? And we'll start with Tiff.
Well, like you said, and it's something where it's unfortunate that the new normal is what it is right now. And the fact that, especially when you leave the house, you know, phone, keys, wallet, and some sort of facial covering. And to always have that facial covering, always have the hand sanitizer, be socially distant when you do go out and you do, hang out with friends and family, just to be smart. And I know that, you know, the world is facing this pandemic. You guys in California have all these wildfires all over the place. Racial tensions all over the place, and it's an untrying time right now with where we are. But I think, again, for all of us to, you know, continue to listen more than speak out. And, you know, if you have coaches that are friends or friends that are of color, reach out to them and just say, hey, I'm here for you. I want to listen, and just be their sounding board so that you can listen to them. They talk to you, so that this, like you said, Rob, this, you know, social unrest, this, all of this that's going on, it needs to stop. And it's something that, you know, 60 years ago, these things were already happening, and they're still happening, and we're in 2020, and we're way better people than what some individuals, what some cities are having, you know, going through on what seems like a nightly basis. But again, I just think at the end of the day, you know, follow the orders from the higher ups, follow the medical professionals and their words of, you know, be socially distant. These are words and terms we were finding out when we all found out the Big West Conference postponed their spring sports season in the middle of March. Stay 6 feet apart, be socially distant, wear your mask, use hand sanitizer, wash your hands. You follow those little things and you can do your part to try and make this a better place. And hopefully one day we can get back to what we were used to.
Great words of encouragement. How about you, Jonathan?
I love to echo what Tip said. It goes a long way just to check in with friends. You know, it's easy to just get, stay in your bubble, but, you know, sending a text, calling a friend, calling family, see how they're doing. It goes a long way. It really boosts everybody's spirits when you do that, especially when it's not expected. I would also say that I would encourage people, yes, it looks, it can, depending on what you look at, it looks bleak right now, but it's going to eventually be over, and hopefully sooner than later. And I would say that, you know, if you just look for signs of improvement. You look at, you know, we're talking about volleyball, so I'll talk about sports in general. You know, you look at how baseball has been able to succeed. NBA bubble has been, you know, a superb success. The NHL bubble has been even more successful. No COVID cases in the last 6 weeks is
AVP bubble. AVP bubble.
So, you know, it's encouraging, you know, to see that sports are being played, and, you know, it's a welcome respite from our daily worries, our daily grind. And I definitely welcome him back.
Yeah, Rob, I'm gonna piggyback off of what Jonathan said here, and I think for, you know, that word of hope he used, and sports, regardless of what level it is, professional, collegiate, if it's your favorite team or not, it brings refreshment, and I think for what we all went through from when all sports were canceled middle of March until the late part of May when you started to see professional soccer in Europe begin. You saw the NWSL with their bubble, and then slowly but surely the MLS's back tournament, you know, began. Then you saw the NBA bubble. Then you saw the NHL bubbles. Then you saw the MLS begin their season. You see, and the NFL is going to begin on Thursday. And just to have that sense of a 2 to 3.5, 4 hour block where you know everything else is going on around the world. But for that sort of time, you can block it out, root for your team, root for just the fact that you have live sports on your television, on your radio, because for a lot of us, sports is our entertainment, whether we're attending or we're a part of it, bringing it to you, the fan. The fact, you know, for those six and a half, 7 weeks where there was nothing going on, it hurt a lot of us because there wasn't anything going on. And you just saw all this negativity going on. That negativity is still going on to this day. But the fact that you're able to have different sports that are going on and you have that chance to go through DVR, go through your channel guide and to pick out, I want to watch this game, I want to look at that game. Whereas in the late part of March, in the entire part of April, unless you were a fan of watching old games or seeing highlights of a player during their heyday, there wasn't much to select from.
Yep. Well, I will just add, you know, because both of you shared some incredible words, but be kind, be understanding, love your brother and sister. There's way too much stuff going on in the world to argue over petty things. We've got to do this all together. With that, I wanted both of you guys to promote your platforms that you're working with, because the world of volleyball doesn't have that much to go to, and I want to definitely point people to what you guys are doing. So go ahead, Tiff, talk about your blog and what you're doing and where they can follow you at.
So on Twitter, you can follow me at TiffersPXP. On Instagram, it's Tiffers. And also on Facebook, you just search for my name. You can find it as well. What we've been doing with the radio station, with ESPN, the Honolulu, and CBS Sports Hawaii, is mimicking the Rainbow Wahine volleyball season. And this would have been year number 47. 47 or 48. I'll have to double check on that one. But what we've been doing every week.
Did you do your
week,
research, Tiff?
We did not. I did not do my research.
Your reputation is tarnished in my eyes.
Yes, it's gone. but what I've been doing is going through sort of this day, on this day in Hawaii volleyball history. And it's mimicking what the season would have looked like. So if you look at a women's volleyball season schedule, and you look at weeks 1 through 4, which traditionally for Hawaii are non-conference matches. They would have normally been on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then you go into conference play every Friday, Saturday you're playing. So on those dates, our station handle, ESPN Honolulu, is releasing what I've been incorporating into on this date. And it's, Rob, you talked to my mom, Jonathan, you know her as well. And the fact that, you know, if there's a fact check you need, you don't even have to go to the media guide, because I just go to my mother and she's able to help me out with facts, data checking. And it's just something sort of fun to keep at, just because, you know, there's not a whole lot of local volleyball news, especially for Hawaii, because that is our sports. That is what we follow. And you guys see the crowds when you guys either travel or you come and you watch a match via TV on a stream. It's something special. And so it's just my little way of, you know, giving back to the fan, whether they're a Hawaii fan or
just a volleyball fan.
Oh, just a volleyball fan. Yes, Rob. Just to give them a little bit of volleyball, just a little nugget here and there.
It's good stuff, and it's gaining traction because you already got some imitators, but we won't call them out. How about you, Jonathan? Resources and how they can follow you and the platform you're working with.
Well, first, because I want to plug Tip some more, he also has his own pod that I think he should be plugging, maybe because he does it with another USC grad, Dave Kawada. So he has his weekly pod where they talk about.
Here's your contractual obligation to mention USC right there.
Oh, there you go. All right. Fight on. And correct me if I'm wrong, Tiff, but the way I look at that podcast is you touch on things related to sports, but from a very uniquely Hawaii angle. Is that
accurate? Yeah, that's what we try to do. It's the Dave and Tiff Sports Podcast. We normally drop 3 episodes a month, depending on, you know, what day of the week my co-host is able to put together the video to put it out on social media. You can find it on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, however you can find your podcast, whether you want just the audio or if you want the full effect of video. You can search for it, you can find it. But like you guys said, it's something something unique. It will touch generally on sports topics, but because Hawaii fans like to follow and keep tabs with Hawaii athletes, collegiate, pro, what have you, we try to keep it as in tune with players with Hawaii ties, keep topics with Hawaii ties as much as possible.
Good stuff. All right, Jonathan, you can talk about your stuff now. It's okay. We've got the Tiff Wells segment completed, so.
So we think. So I'm the associate editor at Off the Block Blog, and we only focus on men's volleyball. So go to offtheblockblog.com. You can find me on Twitter at @MPS_bias, or you can find the editor, Vinny Lopes, at offtheblock11 on Twitter. Although some people would say that, you know, how can you tell the difference between the two of us?
Hint, hint, Micah Ma'a. Which is a great video. Look for it on my social feed. Micah Ma'a calls Jonathan Vinny Lopes. So, hey, Tiff Wells, ESPN Honolulu, Jonathan Bates, a.k.a. MPSF Bias of Off the Block Blog. Thanks for taking time with the Vital Volley Podcast. Always enjoy my friends and colleagues here because we have some great laughs, but even better volleyball stories to tell because we get to experience a lot together. And also just chatter behind the scenes as armchair setters. So thanks again. And be sure to follow these guys. They are huge contributors of the game. They're a large reason as to why they're growing in the areas in which they're able to affect. And we're only local, but we're looking to go nationwide. So hey, gents, have a good rest of your day. And thanks for joining in again.
Thanks, Rob.
Aloha, guys.